Hi everyone and welcome back to Wizards of Ecom. This is Amy, your host, and today I have Anthony Cofrancesco. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
Perfect.
Alright, so we have today Anthony Cofrancesco on the show. He's an industry liaison tool. He's also a fellow Amazon seller who presented several times to our group already. He's also this guy's a brainiac, not sure if he's a maniac, but he's a former loss prevention specialist at Amazon.com, and he's been on both sides, so you guys can know the bad and good and the ugly, and while still being like a POS compliant. So Anthony, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, and maybe a little bit of a maniac.
All right, yes, that's what I wanted to hear. Brilliant. So, Anthony, the reason I have you on the show, besides the fact that, as I was mentioning, you presented several times to our group, and all your presentations, I don't want to exaggerate, but all of them were brilliant. And I'm not exaggerating when I'm saying that. Basically, the reason why I'm saying that, it was very thorough, and also it gave you an inside detail. It wasn't necessarily about the software, you know, that we're also going to talk about today, that's like split testing, but it was, you were educating us seller to take the best decisions possible, you know? And also I think that via split testing, this is what we are doing. We are educating ourselves what our audience wants, basically to see, to buy, to feel, basically. And this is going to be the topic of the day, right? Split testing and understanding what it's all about. So I talked a lot, haven't had any questions. I have 9 questions so far. Let's start, right? So, what is split testing, basically?
Yeah, so really simply stated, split testing, sometimes it's also called A-B testing. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's a methodology that you can use to decide between usually 2 different options and decide which one's better and which one's going to have an impact on the business. And so in a traditional A-B test, I think the example that most people's brains will gravitate towards is, let's say you have a checkout button on a website, and you're deciding, hey, should I make the checkout button orange or should I make it blue? And you're not really sure what the answer is. So you run a split test, you run an A-B test. And what's going to happen is you're going to use some kind of software that is going to show 50% of the people that land on that checkout page at random, 50% will see the A version, let's just say it's the blue. And the other 50% is going to see the B version, the orange. And you're going to let that run for a period of time. And what we're all hoping for when we run a split test is that one of the 2 options is going to actually perform better than the other, and ideally significantly better. And so if you were to run that test and for whatever reason, we don't know why, but the orange button is going to get 50% more add to carts than the blue button, then that would be a very successful split test. Usually it's going to be a lot smaller ratios than that, but you're just looking to test different attributes of your checkout page or your listing, whatever it might be, for small optimizations that you can do over and over again to try to see what impact you can make on sales or revenue or conversion.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So now that we have a better understanding about what split testing is, I think first off, I would ask, what are the most common 3 mistakes that you see newbies are making whenever they are going to test something on a platform via split testing?
Yeah. And so should I specifically tie this into e-com, FBA, or just like anything in general?
How do you think it would be most helpful if you would answer?
I guess from an e-com perspective, mistake number 1 is just not ever getting involved with split testing at all. Mm-hmm. I think when people first jump into it, it can be very overwhelming. There's mm-hmm. so many different things, and when you're running a business, you have all these different things, this laundry list of items that you want to go and accomplish. And it's always a prioritization in your mind as a business owner of what do I actually want to spend my time on? And split testing is typically what I see is one of these things that people have heard of. They have an idea of what it is, but they never actually get around to doing it. The mistake number 2, I would say, is kind of the opposite side of that, is that they start doing split testing, but then they just go crazy and they're split testing way too many things. They have the scope of what they're trying to test is way too wide. And so in that regard, they're not just focusing on testing the button, they're focusing on testing the banner and the button and the images and every single bit about the listing, which is also sometimes worse than the first option, because then you're going to get bogged down. Mistake number 3 is, I think the classic one is that you're trying to test more than one element at a time. And so just by the nature of split testing, if I've got that group and 50% are going to see the orange button and the blue button. If I'm also testing the price at the exact same time, if I'm testing the images at the exact same time, the key rule of split testing is you can only test one thing at a time, only modify one variable at a time. Otherwise, it's just, you're never going to know. You might see an uplift in your sales or in your conversion rate, but you're not going to know what specific thing caused that change.
Got it. That's brilliant. Yeah. Thank you so much for that feedback. Actually, you know what, everyone, I think that everyone agrees with you, yet everyone is saying, yeah, I'm not doing that. I know how to do it, but I'm not doing that. So like, okay, me included, there you go. So shameless plug, I'm also doing the same thing. I am your number three newbie. Like, I'm also like testing this and that. And like, what worked then afterwards? Like, you don't know. You don't know what worked because you tested so many things. So yeah, definitely I can relate to that. I think the next question would be like the top three things people are not utilizing or they miss when creating their polls, or in this case, their A-B tests.
Yeah, so I'd say the biggest things that people miss is, first off, is just having a really good foundation of what you should be testing and setting up, why am I even running this test? And so maybe if we can all think back to high school or maybe college when we had some science classes, the whole concept of a hypothesis, right? Mm-hmm. When you're going in and trying to do a scientific experiment, you don't know what the result is going to be. And a lot of the times, actually the vast majority of times in an experiment, whatever your hypothesis is, whatever the idea that you have in going in is most likely going to be wrong. And you're really looking to actually prove that, for better or for worse. And so I think a lot of people, they're going to say, okay, I'm going to test a different email subject line. And they're doing split testing just for the purpose of doing split testing, but they're not really thinking about what's the purpose behind why I'm running this test. Mm-hmm. I think you can really make a lot of gains just by sitting down and spending a little bit more time of actually writing it out like a hypothesis. And you're going to say, okay, I'm going to split test between a version of the subject line, one that's kind of cheeky, one that's a little bit funny, it has some humor in it. And then I'm going to test another version that's a little bit more serious. But then take it a step beyond that. And don't just say, okay, I'm going to test between a funny and a serious. Mm-hmm. You're going to write out a hypothesis. And you're going to say, I'm setting up a test between a funny and a serious subject line. My hypothesis is that the funny subject line is going to better resonate with customers. It's going to be more engaging and it's going to cause them to have to open up the email and see what's inside. And therefore, based on this hypothesis, I believe that the funny subject line is going to win. And I'm going to have a definite goal at the end. I'm going to see a higher open rate, or I'm going to see a higher click-through rate in the email. And you're going to put this together. Now you have a really good idea for when data starts coming in. You're not just getting a number of which one won, which one lost. You're starting to get an idea of like, okay, what's the reason I did that? And how do I take this to the next level? Maybe you prove that the funny subject line did outperform, by 10% or 20% or whatever the metric is. But now you're going to have a guide for, okay, well, let's go to round two of this, right? What should I do from here? Maybe I try to come up with two different versions of a funny subject line. Maybe I try to, okay, let's see if puns are going to work, whatever it might be. And so I think, yeah, starting with a really strong foundation is really important. You got to remind me of the question. I was just going there.
You just answered the question. It's fine. It's brilliant. Okay, now let me ask you, because you were talking about the foundation, right? So here, what I see most of the time, people are very like, they're neglecting that part, or they're very like, oh, I have to do this and that. And it's very strategic. And that's also the reason why they're not doing it. So how would a basic structure in this case look like? This is what I'm like, your hypothesis, they were saying, okay, this is what I'm looking like, and if that worked, what next? Does it make sense?
Yeah, so the structure that I try to look at is kind of an if-then statement, right? Okay. And so it's like, if I do this, then this will happen. And so when I'm writing out my hypothesis, what I'm going to say is, you know, it doesn't have to be anything long form or complicated. It doesn't have to have an overly high amount of detail, but it's just going to be a very simple statement. If I'm testing a main image on my mm-hmm. Amazon listing, mm-hmm. I'm going to say, my hypothesis is that if I add product packaging to the main image, then the image is going to convey more information about the product. And the result will be that more people will click into the listing, because they're getting more of that information up front. So you don't really need to overthink it, but just a if then, this is the end result. This is what I think is going to happen.
Got it. And getting back to the question was like top three things people are not utilizing or they miss when creating their boss. So first one, the hypothesis. Second one, maybe?
Yeah, so first is a hypothesis, the second is just going to be having access, a tool that's really underutilized is having access to enough creative options. And so with PicFu, I see this all the time, even in the previous example of split testing that add to cart button, you know, where people, I think, often limit themselves and they think, okay, well, for a button, I can have an orange button or I can have a blue button. But in reality, you have all of these different colors that you can use, an infinite number of colors that you can use. You're also not limited to just the color of the button. You're also open to, you could put a border around the button, or maybe when you hover over the button, maybe that's the different color and we're actually keeping the button color the same. And mm-hmm. So thinking about things a little bit too narrowly, what I want to try to do is I want to think about like, what are all of the different things that I could do? And then make a gut decision. Obviously you can't test all of it, right? You can't test an infinite number of colors. And so I like to think of it like, I'm going to come up with a list first of all the things that I could split test. And then I'm going to try to think like, based on what I know about my customer, based about the product that I'm selling, I'm going to try to get an idea of this is what I think is going to work the best. And this is the one thing that I'm going to focus on. And I'm going to keep trying to refine that one focus point before I move on to something else.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Yeah, that totally makes sense. So because we're talking about like things that are not like underutilized, let's put it that way. I think the next thing would be unrealistic expectations. Most of the time people do have unrealistic expectations. For example, they are just going and just going to test something and it's like, PicFu, it's not working, or any other like software, like split testing surface is not working. Why?
Yeah, well, I think that the majority of people are going to have unrealistic expectations. I think they think because they've heard this example about the add to cart button and it's going to do much better. Most people run the test and they find out that it's going to perform almost exactly the same. I think it probably comes down to a few factors. Like with traditional split testing, if we're just talking about, you know, driving traffic to a website, driving traffic to a listing, most people, if they're on the smaller end, if you don't have enough traffic, mm-hmm. you're not going to be able to get a significant result, or you might get a significant result, but it's not actually a real result, right? If I'm sending 10 people to my checkout page and five of them click the orange button, it might have much less to do with, or seven of them rather click the button. So 70%, if they click the button, it doesn't necessarily mean that orange is better. It just potentially means that at random, the people that were chosen, maybe they were going to buy the product anyway, or they just don't get enough data to get a conclusive result. So a real big problem is if you don't have enough traffic, you're not going to be able to split test anyway. Yeah, I'd say, yeah, that's very, very common. The other thing too, is like, if they are getting something that's quite similar, what a lot of people do is, let's say even they're testing their product packaging on PicFu, mm-hmm. they have a version of their product packaging, they create a new version, and then they run a test and it's 50-50 or 60-40. And they're like, what does that mean? And I think a lot of the time they haven't spent enough time actually focusing on the creative side of it, of really developing not just one version of the product packaging, but coming up with many versions and going through many tests just on the packaging, because they're creating options that are actually very, very similar. And even though like you've got the orange and the blue button, maybe it actually is quite irrelevant at the end of the day. And they haven't thought enough or put enough creative effort into really thinking about how to make that button look different or what's going to drive conversion rate.
That's a great point. And actually like tidying up really well with the next question, which is like base rate fallacy. Most of the time people are not getting the results because there's not enough pool of people who actually took the decision. So here, what would be a good rule of thumb to know exactly how many people, how to choose, or what should the pool look like? Because if I say, okay, you have 500 people, obviously 500 people would be more like more people to who are going to bring a decision, right, than 50 people. So here, what have you seen would work the best?
You know, I guess I don't know if there's a number in my head in terms of like what kind of traffic you should be getting. It seems like, you know, you're going to at least want to be in the probably 500 to 1,000 range minimum before you start running a split test. And that's got to be on some kind of regular basis. It can't be like 1,000 people coming to your checkout page in a year. It's probably like closer to 1,000 in a month before mm-hmm. you're going to start to see any, maybe 1,000's high, maybe 500. I guess if you're selling on e-com, if you're doing, I don't know. It really depends on the product. You know, some threshold of units a day. I would say though, like for a lot of the new sellers out there and people just starting, that is kind of the value of PickFu, is they've got a captive audience. And so if you're running split tests on your own platform or on your own website and you're not seeing meaningful results because your audience is too small, that's where PickFu comes in handy, because they've already got that audience there for you. You don't need to have built it already. And they're being paid to go in and say, look at this and tell me your opinion about why this is actually better. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and I'll be honest, I'm not, you know, I'm not in data science. I don't have any background in that. So I'm sure someone out there, actually at the last Wizards meetup, there was a lady who is a data scientist, and she gave some really great feedback as to, well, this is statistically significant and this isn't statistically significant. And there's a lot of people that know a lot more about that than I do. But I would say, like, as a general rule of thumb, like if you're running these tests and they're not giving you any kind of spread of data, or it's just too small to get any results, then probably look externally for a place to get that feedback from.
Yeah. Anthony, I just gave you such a brilliant intro, such a disappointment. Why couldn't you get that? Okay, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Okay.
No, but really, I agree with you. And most of the time what I see, this is why I brought up the subject, because most of the time what I see, people are not like, maybe they are saying, okay, this is my main image, and they are saying, okay, 50 people is enough. Okay. Do you assume that 50 people are going to buy the product the first month, you know? So I was thinking, okay, maybe like my personal way, how to like measure this. Okay, I'm thinking, if this month my product is going to be bought by 500 people, let's say, you know, I would have also like 500 people to test it, you know, to see if what is there, you know. So this is why I was thinking maybe you also have some tricks or something. Like, this is my personal trick, by the way. It's not necessarily something like going by the rules. It's just like my own logic, you know. And I was thinking probably other people are also like doing something similar as well. So it wasn't really testing you. It was just like your feedback, you know.
Right. Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah, I wish I had some better information to give there, and I actually should probably know that. Here's what I'll tell you though, is a lot of people say, and they ask, like, even in PickFu, because our minimum sample size is 50 people, and they're like, is that statistically significant? And the answer is no. What I will say is that the vast majority of entrepreneurs that I know, their point of reference is just one, right? It's usually themselves. Correct. Maybe if they are, you know, they have a spouse, or maybe they have some kids, maybe the reference point goes up to two or three. If they have a creative team with maybe four or five members, maybe that reference point gets up to five. And so what I will tell you in a very non-statistical way is there's undoubtable proof to show that a reference point of 50 is definitely going to be better than a reference point of five, of three, and especially of one. And so if you're going through and you're trying to optimize different creative assets, different parts of your website, and your reference point is one, I would do anything that I possibly can to increase the reference point beyond that. If you have traffic coming in and you have 500 people coming to the website, let's say you have a very good conversion rate and 10% of those are converting on a monthly basis, and you have 50 data points that you can get on a monthly basis, running some kind of split test and getting data points from those 50 people is going to be definitely better than just a reference point of one. And if it's some software that you can put on your website, or maybe a lot of these website builders like Shopify stores, you can get A/B testing tools that are very low cost. If it's something that you can set up, let run in the background, a lot of the email marketing like MailChimp, you can put up an A and a B version of the email that's going out to customers. If that's something you can set up, let it run in the background for, you know, 4 weeks, an entire month, and get those 50 data points, that is definitely going to be better than not getting any data points at all, especially if you can set it up in a minimal amount of time.
Definitely. And I totally agree with what you are saying. See, something that I think actually was missed is like you're paying those people to answer and to give an honest feedback, you know. And most of the time what I see is like, first off, you can also choose your audience, which if you're talking about family or close friends or something, you cannot, because the audience is already given, you know, and they might not be prime shoppers. They might not even, for example, buy things from that specific niche, you know? So this is what I love about your software. That's also like, it's going really deep into, okay, understanding exactly, if you know exactly your customer who's buying from you, it will be super, super helpful, because you already have all that data and you can properly use it. And yeah, so you were saying it's not subjective, which I like a lot. It's so super, super helpful.
Sweet. Yeah, I agree.
Next question. How to ask effective questions when you're going to split this something? Like if it's not blue or orange, as you were saying, but it's something more complex.
Well, you know, if it's in the context of, if it's in the context of pick foo, normally when you're running a split test on, you know, on a non-pick foo platform, you're not going to write a question. You're just going to put up both of the options. You know, you're not going to give anyone any context. You're just going to at random. That's really true split testing. Pick foo is more on the side of market research. You are split testing in a way. But with pick foo, there's some more nuanced parts because you are putting in a question. And the reason that you put in the question is that when someone's going to your website and they're purchasing, they already know what the product is. They've made it to your website. They have that intent to buy the product. But when someone is being asked a question on pick foo, these people, they see many, many different polls. And so a really effective question is going to include some context as to what the product is that you're trying to sell and what the purpose of the test is. And so if, for example, I'm optimizing a main image, you know, some people might put up a question that says, which image do you prefer? And they'll put up, you know, their main image option A and the main image option B. That's only moderately helpful because these people don't really have any context as to what the product really is. And so I'm going to try to give some context, and I'm going to try to go beyond a step of what do you prefer? I'm going to try to actually think, what's the purpose of optimizing my main image? The main image on Amazon is to get someone's attention from page one, to grab their eyes, to convey some information about the product. And so I'm going to give the question a little bit more context by saying, which image is more eye-catching for this electric toothbrush? So now the person knows, okay, we're talking about an electric toothbrush, and they're not asking what my personal preference is on the image. They're specifically asking which one is more eye-catching. And so maybe if I have like this, you know, this toothbrush here, and then I have like a tube of toothpaste next to it, and I'm testing one version of the toothpaste that's like a really bright blue and the other version that's more of like a darker pastel. And I'm really trying to understand, okay, which one is going to do a better job of catching someone's eyes from the first page of search results. Now I've set up my question in a way that's really going to reflect what my intention is on the poll. And that's kind of getting back to where I see people making mistakes is they just start going in and they're saying, which image do you prefer? But you're not going to, I've seen this many times of running my own tests, that if I put in a different question, I can upload the same creative assets and get vastly different results. And so it really does come into how you're asking the question. And again, that really gets down to starting your polls off, starting your split test off with a really good foundation. What do I want to learn from? What's the purpose of the split test?
Yeah, I got it. Yeah, then definitely. I agree with what you're saying. I also like, as you were saying, testing, I also was testing. I wasn't testing the same images, but I was testing something very similar. Like it was for the main picture, for example, in my case, you know, and it was, I asked something very, very specifically, and the way that I got the answer, you know, that's amazing. You clearly see, okay. And I also put them, look, because we are doing the pet niche, you know, you're a cat parent, you're a dog parent, you're whatever. This is what is given. Which one would you buy, you know? And us like giving all the background, you know? And I've seen a huge, like 78, 22%, you know, difference. And I'm thinking, hey, if I wouldn't have asked those specific questions, would my outcome be also different, you know? So I was thinking, hey, how much does actually work to really work right? Or the wording, you know, in this scenario. Right. So definitely.
Yeah, it's definitely really important. And I would just encourage people to really think about the intent of what they're trying to ask. Sometimes I might say, like, you know, I find that with conversion optimization, it comes down to two different factors. You have the visual appeal, which is maybe about 50%, but the other maybe 50 or even more percent, I find this to be even more important, is the flow of information. And so if, for example, I'm designing my product packaging, I want it to look good, but the more important thing is I don't want to have too much information on there that someone's just going to say, this is too complicated. I don't want to read it. I don't want to look at it. I want every part of that packaging to be absorbed by the customer's brain so that they really comprehend and understand what's going on. And so another question that I'll use that doesn't relate at all to aesthetic appeal, to visuals, is just flow of information. And I'll upload two versions of the product packaging, and I'll say, which of these packaging or which of these infographics does a best job in conveying the information, this feature about the product? So if I'm trying to sell like an electric toothbrush, and a really important thing that I want to convey is that, that this thing has a long battery life and you can get through however many times of brushing your teeth without having to charge again. I'm going to say, which one of these infographics does a better job of explaining the battery duration of this toothbrush. And I'm going to go just for flow of information. Now the person who's on the poll, they're not trying to decide which image looks better. They're saying, which one does a better job of conveying this information into my brain? And that's probably even more powerful than just looking at aesthetics.
Yes, I'm not crazy. You're crazy too. Yes. I love it. No, sometimes people are really like thinking that, hey, you're doing too much. When in fact, it's really how human brain it's working. Like if you're not staging the proper frame, they will reply to the frame that you're giving them, you know? And most of the time they will reply to the incorrect frame. So I really love that you were saying that. Hey,
well, and the one thing that I'll interject there too with is just that we can see this time and time again on Amazon. You can see sellers that are doing incredibly well and their images do not look good, but they're very simple. They're very to the point. They literally, it's just text and then something about the product, but it's very clear and you can test that. And if I test and say, which image do you prefer? The better one, better looking one is going to win. But if I'm saying which one does a better job of conveying the information, if the really good looking one is jam packed with information and it's complicated, I'll actually get the one that looks worse to win. And so there's a balance that obviously if you can do both, that's the best, but I would probably prioritize information flow over aesthetic appeal most of the time, but I try to do both.
I think the next question is going to be top three things to become better at using split testing services. We kind of talked like about strategizing. Is there anything else? And also like asking better questions. Is there anything else that should be like, hey, be aware of that because then you can really become a pro.
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest one I would say is change your creative team's mindset from creating one version of something to creating what I call high volume variations. And so like, think about if a company like Pepsi, if they're launching a new product and they're designing product packaging, I actually have a friend that works in marketing at Pepsi. And I asked her, I was like, when you guys are launching new product packaging, how many designs is your team putting out? And guess if the answer is one, right? Of course it's not. They're not going to just be like, oh, thanks, Jeffrey. That's a really good packaging design. This is the one we're going to take to market. They're going to come up with like a handful of different packaging designs, and they might only take like 10% of those that they're even going to refine to move something to move forward. And so where a lot of, especially solopreneurs and people that are working on smaller teams, what they're going to do is they're going to go say, hey, they're going to go to their designer, whether it's an agency or they go to Fiverr, Upwork, outsourced designer, they're going to go to them and say, make me product packaging. The person's going to send them one version. And then they're going to be like, okay, this is what we're going to use, or this is what I'm going to use to test. I don't recommend that. Change your team's creative mindset to say, go and make me at least 2 to 3 versions of the same thing. My designer calls them studies. So if I'm launching a new logo, he'll make me 3 to 5 different versions of the logo study. And we'll use that as the basis for testing. So that way we're going to go from 5 and we're going to find the best attributes from the A, the B, the C. We're going to eliminate the worst attributes. We're going to take those 5. We're going to go down to 3. We're going to take those 3, we're going to test them, and then we're going to finally get down until we find something that's good versus just starting with 1. And then now I'm going to only test that against itself, or I'm going to test against the competitor. You want to start running your creative teams as large companies run their creative teams. And it's going to give you a lot more options in terms of testing. And you have to be okay with, the fact as a business owner to say, I'm going to spend 2 or 3 times more on doing this, but the process is much more effective. But it's the same way that if you're running different ad types, if you're running PPC ads or especially off Amazon ads for Facebook or for Google, you're not just going to come up with 1 ad type. You're going to come up with 10 ad types. And what you're going to find is that 2 out of the 10 or even 1 out of the 10 are going to some portion of those are going to strongly outperform the others. And the real answer is like, you don't know what's going to work in the beginning. You're just going to put out 10 different ad types. One of them is going to perform, and that's the one you're going to double down on. And it should be the same way for your creative strategy and your testing strategy as well.
That's brilliant. It actually brings up 2 questions that are not on my huge list. So first off, it's like, okay, you were saying that having different, like I see them like iterations, like different iterations of the same thing. So how many is enough and it's not too much?
It depends on your team. That's really important. If you're running a very lean team with few designers, then I would say do not go beyond 2 to 3. It's going to be way too much. Because the other thing too is what designers will tend to do is if you ask for 10, they'll make you 10, but they're not going to put their heart and soul into those 10. And so I really want, if I have a limited budget and limited resources, I'm going to say 2 to 3. If you're a big company and you're a multi-million dollar seller, And there's a lot of sellers I know out there that they have legacy brands that have been around for many years and they're making a tremendous amount of money, but this is the first time that they're really looking at the creative component. They know that their packaging is outdated. They know that their listing is outdated or their website. If you have some money to invest, go and spend the money really investing on it and you can go and create 8 different options. I wouldn't really ever go more than 8, but come up with 8 different options and go there. If you're just starting off, that's only if you have resources though. And that's usually going to be like a multi-person design team. And you're going to be putting a lot of time in and money into getting this done. But if you're just starting out, 2 to 3 is more than enough.
Got it. And you were also mentioning about that you were thinking about how many, and also like, why do you think that most people are not really seeing, because you were giving an example like Facebook ads, like you will have clearly so many iterations and then you're going to pick one. Why do you think that people are still like, no, this is my design, this is what I'm going for, and I don't need something else? Where from is that mentality coming from?
I think it comes down to two really big things, and I think they're largely based on human emotion. First is the thought that I don't know why it is, because I see myself doing this as well. But when there's something that's created, we have this attachment to it. And so we build this attachment to something and we think it looks good, right? We think this looks really good. And when there's a process that goes into something, it's like it's been built. It's like if, I don't know, I have my family has a cabin up in New Hampshire and we built this whole thing from scratch and it's beautiful. And there's a lot of imperfections in it, but like we really love it because we built it with our hands. And so when you put a lot of time and effort into something, you're going to become attached to it. And even if you're not the one doing the design work, you might just be the business owner giving feedback on the revisions. When you get to that end result, you feel very attached to it. And so now when you start going in and you have someone either ripping it apart or you upload it into PicFu and it doesn't perform against your competitors, you start to take it personally. And I've been doing this for a number of years now. And I was actually working with a project manager the other day. And I had sent over some creative assets. And then I was listening to a Loom video. She was making some feedback for the graphics team. And I could feel myself getting angry because I was like, what is she saying? But then I listened to it and I was like, and I remember talking to her afterwards. And I was like, it's so funny because I felt it's like a normal human response to be like, what the heck are you saying? Like, that was good. It was good in the first revision. But when I listened to the feedback, she had really good points. It was very, very valid. And so it's fine that you have that initial response, but you have to train your brain to not only be okay with it, but to go out and actively seek that. It's really, really important. The second component in terms of like why people get so incredibly attached to these things is because I think a lot of people have this misconception that things related to creativity is kind of like magic. And it's like, oh, some people are just born creative, some people are talented, and I'm not that way. I don't want to get involved in the creative part of my business. And the only thing I'll say there is like, I ran an agency. It was a 30-person agency for a number of years before we sold the business. We had 30 employees, graphic designers, videographers, copywriters, everything, photographers. I do not know how to shoot a camera off of manual mode. I do not know how to use Photoshop. I cannot use Illustrator, and I do very, very little video editing. The thing that people need to understand about creativity is, yes, there's definitely people that are born with something in them that allows them to be a little bit more proficient. But it's just like this with e-com. Before we got into this industry, I didn't know anything about any of this. And if you would have told me 5 years ago that I would be working on, or that people would even pay me money to give them creative advice for running creative teams, I would have said, that's crazy. I'm not a creative person. And in fact, I really dislike creativity, but it's just like a muscle in your body. And at first it's going to be very, very difficult and it's going to be very foreign, but the more and more you do it, the easier it becomes and the more you expose yourself to it. And so I think, yeah, part of it is that attachment. And the other 50% is just that people are very, they need to be demystified about this concept of creativity being magic, because it's really not.
Mm-hmm. I really, really love the answer. Thank you so much for sharing also about the cabin and so on. I think it's super important. And if it comes to the sharing part, I'm also going to share a bit, right? I've been in music production for the past 8 years or so on. And you know, some of the time whenever you're seeing someone who's playing you a song or whatever, that you're saying more than, hey, that's so beautiful, I really love it, rather than, hey, why don't you change that hook or whatever, they are going to say, ah, what do you say? This is my creation. This is my baby. It's like saying someone to, hey, just put some makeup on that baby, you know, because it's so ugly, you know. But it's exactly right. As you were saying. I think also, like, most of the time people get so attached to the idea and to the fact that they did it, you know. It's, I'm the creator. Yeah. How dare you, you know. It's like criticizing my own work. But see, as you were also mentioning, this is super, super important, because this is what we are asking people by split testing. Hey, be objective. I cannot be objective, right? Because I did it. I created it. Either it's me personally, either my team, whatever. I am behind it, you know? And for me, it's like brilliant because it's mine, you know? And this is why I love like all services that are similar to your, no, Pickful, because I'm a Pickful power user, I would say, right? So I love also your service as well, because this is what it brings you, you know? The lack of subjectivity, but very objective point of view. Hey, this is why, you know? So definitely I agree with that. Anthony, at this point, are there any questions that I should have asked and I haven't?
I'm thinking of if there's anything good, and I guess maybe the biggest one I get a lot is people say, okay, well, how do I go and get this done? I know that I should be doing split testing, but I'm not a designer. I'm not creative. Do you know anyone? Do you know any designers? And so all I would say is that if you're brand new, just starting out, be okay with biting the bullet and hire an agency. It's probably not going to make sense financially, and you probably won't, and this isn't a jab at newer sellers, but like you probably won't be good enough in terms of creative management to get good results. Like a lot of people, they are very turned off in the beginning of the idea of they go to Fiverr, they go to Online Jobs PH, they hire a designer. They think they're going to pay someone $3 to $4 an hour. They're just going to be able to say, go wild, make my stuff look better. And they're very surprised when it comes back and it's garbage.
Wild. Work. It's coming back pretty wild.
Yeah. It's a big misconception. And so I'd say like, it takes a while to figure out creative management. It took me a long time to get half decent at it. And I still have a very long way to go. Just go bite the bullet and hire an agency, get it done. When you get to a larger size and you feel comfortable managing a team and you have budgets to hire good workers, go and build out your own team. But where a lot of people mess up is they think about things totally backwards, and they say, okay, I'm going to spend $20,000 to launch a product. And, you know, let's say $5,000-$10,000 of that is inventory costs. Nobody is going to go when they're launching a product and say, okay, well, let me try to save a little bit of money on my inventory costs. Let me just skip my inspections. Let me, you know, Amazon, they charge me all these fees. Instead of doing FBA, I'm just going to do FBM and I'm going to ship everything myself and go to the post office. Like no one does that. But when it comes to saying, hey, on a $20,000 product launch, you should invest $2,000 in creative. And they're like, no, let me try to do this for $300. That's like hugely problematic. And it's a big, big mistake. And I see too many sellers making it. So just realize that like in the long term, creative is what's going to win, especially on a platform like FBA. And you got to invest in it. And that's just the reality.
Yeah, definitely. That's super addition. Thank you so much for that. Really needed it. To be super respectful of your time before we're wrapping up, some questions I'd love to ask my guests. First one being, if you would have a superpower, which one would be?
Yeah, I think definitely would be teleportation. Just being able to just go from point to point instantaneously, that would be very, very advantageous.
You know what? I had Michael from the PPC Dent on the podcast. He said the same thing. He would like to be like a, what was the name from X-Men? The devil? Like he was teleporting?
I know who you're talking about, yeah.
I don't know. Oh, so good. It means that you both are very like similar into like the way how you think, which is great. All right, so getting to the next question would be, what would be $50 or less investment you recently made that helped you become better with split testing?
Ooh, that's a good one.
What do you
I
mean?
Think a really good I haven't personally made this because I have designers that work for me, but a really great tool that is very cheap to get started with. I don't know if it's under $50, but it might be like $70. It's an app called Glorify. Mm-hmm. I know Carlos is a big fan of it, but it's basically like Canva for e-commerce. And they have all of these templates that you can drop your product in. And actually with very little graphic design knowledge, you can go and create infographics that are actually surprisingly good. And it's like $70. I think it might be for a lifetime subscription still. It's not expensive. That's a very, very good move. The other I'd recommend is like, if you don't already have some wireless headphones, go get yourself some wireless headphones. You can get good pairs on Amazon for $50. You got to change it up. And as someone in the music industry,
I know much better
sound quality, much better insulation from noise. And part of the thing to get started with split testing is just to start. And what I find is just putting on some music, getting into the zone, and you're going to find these split tests just roll out. The menial tasks get a lot more fun when you've got some good music and it sounds good.
Yeah, definitely. And this was like a comeback to my, like, why don't you know that? You should know that.
Yeah, you got to get some. I'm going to send you a gift.
Good. All right. So getting serious, getting back to the next question would be like, what are your top favorite books and why do you love them?
I'm a little bit weird. I've read a lot of the business books. I think what changed my life is I was working for Amazon and I read The 4-Hour Work Week and Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That just blew my mind. And so I really like those. Aside from that, I'm very strange. I don't really read many fiction books, but I really enjoy reading. This is going to sound very strange, but I really enjoy reading books about drugs. And so like about the whole process, about how they affect your brain from a neurochemical standpoint. I've always been, since a kid, very, very interested in it. So I'll just find like who's the best research psychologist on it. And I'll like really dive into it. It goes into case studies. It goes into addiction. It goes into all of these things. I'm just fascinated by that world. I can just absorb those books. And it's very interesting to me.
You know that now you have to give me a title, right?
I'm sorry?
You know that now you have to give me a title.
Yeah, one that I recently read. It's very good. I'd recommend it if you're interested in the topic. It's called Ketamine, Dreams and Reality. Dreams and Realities, rather. It's by a guy named Carl Jansen. He's like the leading researcher on ketamine. He ran all of these different studies. And what's very interesting about these drugs is in the US now, the classification on them is getting changed. And so they're using a lot of these for like ketamine, for example, has been very, very effective in treating alcoholism. So it's like people who are heavily addicted to alcohol, they go through this ketamine IV treatment. And what it does is it allows the brain, because it's a dissociative, it allows the brain to have these big realizations about why am I doing this to my body? Why am I doing this to my life? And the recovery rates are very, very high. And so it's a fascinating book. It'll blow your mind. And yeah, there's a lot out there like it. That's the most recent. Very good.
Brilliant. You're the first guest that's going to talk about this. Awesome. See, this is why I'm asking these questions, because otherwise, how would I have known about this topic? I would have never. All right, so how can the people get a hold of you, say hello, how are you doing, ask more about Bigfoom, because you're also a sponsor.
Sure thing, yeah. So they can hit me up via email, anthony@pickfoo.com. And also if people want to hit me up on Instagram as well, it's just @AnthonyKofran. And I'm always happy to hop on a call. And, this is the only thing I do here at Pickfoo is work on case studies and help support our clients. And if you ever need any pointers, just book some time on my calendar and I'm happy to help.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Anthony. And for everyone still listening, thank you so much for still listening. We know that we are your best choice. And especially today, because, split testing is really a big deal. And Anthony really took 41 minutes of his time so you can learn more about split testing. So kudos to Anthony. Thank you so much, Anthony, once again. And everyone else, see you next Wednesday. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.